Hello and welcome. Tonight we're going to discuss our second lecture on shareholder rights, and this is all about shareholders. On our previous lecture, we discussed corporate finance and how corporations actually raise their capital with things like shares and bonds and their operations as a business. How do they get that money in? From many sources. And those corporate assets allow that corporation to run and operate its business. Really all begins with the shares. Bonds is another vehicle, but it's really based on shares. And tonight we're going to talk about the people who invest in those shares, the shareholders. We're going to provide some definitions. We're going to talk about the rights of shareholders. We're going to talk about their liabilities and their votes, because one of the most important part of being a shareholder is your right to vote on the matters of concern to the corporation, principally electing that board of directors, which is the policy-making entity of the corporation. And after this, we're going to talk about our case, and that's in our next lecture. So let's get started. Once again, we talk about a corporation. It is an artificial person under the law. New York State, that's the business corporation law, has an existence which is distinct and separate from its associated individuals. That are people like the shareholders that we're going to talk about tonight. The members of the board of directors, the policy-making body, and the officers, those people retained by the board of directors to operate and run the corporation. It has a duration that can be perpetual. It can go on forever, or it can go for a period of years. It acts as a unit with that governance, that is a representative Republican form of governance that allows the corporations to be able to have the shareholders vote, the board of directors act as the policy body, just like you vote for a legislative body and they make the laws. Well, you do the same thing in a corporation. The shareholders, who are the owners, vote for the board of directors and they make the policy and the decisions for the corporation. It's implemented through the officers and their employees. It acts as a unit. And it operates within the scope of the powers confirmed upon it by law. In New York State, again, that's the business corporation law. Remember, it has limited liability. It has those entity powers. It has that corporate personhood. It is an artificial person under the law. It has that centralized management. Unlike a sole proprietorship, unlike a partnership, it's not the owners who manage and run the corporation. It has centralized management. The shareholders, the owners, elect a policy board, a board of directors, to provide that management, who in turn hires officers to run the corporation pursuant to that policy they lay down. It has that continuity of existence. It has, can be perpetual, can be for a term of years. It has a free transferability of interest. That means the shares, which are the very basis, the equity interest, the ownership of the corporation, can be sold amongst different people. If you buy a share in a corporation, you can sell it. You can gift it away. And someone else can take it over. A corporation operates based on statutory sources of authority. It's a creature of statute. The statute, the business corporation law in New York, which is empowered by our state constitution, allows for corporations to come into existence and to operate. It's based on that statute. Take away that statute, there's no power to form and operate corporations. That statute is what governs. And lastly, all corporations have a constitutionally recognized status. They are artificial people under the law, and they're viewed as given rights as that artificial person. They have rights of free speech. They have rights of free association. They have due process rights. They do not have privileges and immunities, meaning you can discriminate between states of corporations. That means a corporation from Delaware doesn't have to be treated the same as a domestic corporation in New York under New York law. So privileges and immunities is off the table. Almost every other right is on the table. Obviously, they can't vote in a political election because that's reserved for natural people. But almost every other right that you can think of that natural people enjoy under our Constitution is enjoyed by this artificial person under the law of the corporation. Now, we're going to talk about shareholders because those are the people who drive the corporation. They're the owners of it. And what kind of rights do you have as a shareholder? What right are you given under the business corporation law and under case law to be able to operate as that owner? Black's Law Dictionary defines a shareholder to be one who owns or holds a share in the corporation. They own the share. That's why they're called the shareholder. What is a share? It's one of a definite number of equal parts. That's why they call it a share, in which the capital stock of a corporation is divided. So if the assets of a corporation are X and you have 100 shares, your share is 1/100 of X. You share that with the 99 other shares. And it represents an equity ownership interest in the corporation. Shareholders are owners of the corporation. And a shareholder's rights stems from their status as owners of the corporation. The ownership rights are pronounced. You have a lot of rights. But their control over the corporation is indirect. Why? They're not entitled to manage the corporation under law. Periodically, generally once a year, they're entitled to a vote. They're entitled to vote for the corporation's board of directors, which is the policy-making board of the corporation. The same way we vote for people in the legislative bodies that make our policy and government, they make the statutes that we govern under our laws. You as a shareholder vote for the board of directors to make the policy of the corporation that you own. So their ownership provides indirect control. Just like with our sovereignty, we are the ultimate control over our political institutions because we vote for them. The shareholder is the ultimate sovereign over the corporation because they vote for the policy-making entity of the board of directors. Corporate governance, just like civil government, is a representative Republican form of governance. And as such, the same way that we as citizens don't get to make law, we elect people to make law, the shareholders don't get to run the corporation, they elect people who get to run, and that they transfer that power or control over to that management group, which in the case of a corporation is the board of directors. So what kind of rights does a shareholder actually have? They have many rights. Shareholders of common stock, remember that's the most valuable form of stock because it has those voting rights, have the following rights in the corporation. First and foremost, they have the ownership right. They are the owner of the corporation. So they have that ownership interest. They have the ability as the ownership interest to get the proceeds of the dissolution of the corporation. So when that corporation wraps up its operations, any assets that get distributed to the owners, which are the shareholders. They have the right to transfer or sell their shares to other people. That transferability is an ownership right. Most importantly, they have the voting rights. They have the right to vote for the people who manage the corporation. They have the ability to elect the boards of directors. Those voting rights are critical, and they come with the ownership of that common stock. They also have the rights for receipt of dividends. If the corporation declares a general dividend, not just to preferred shareholders, because remember, they don't get a right to vote, but also to the common stock shareholders, then they have the right as common stock shareholders to be able to receive that dividend check. And that's an important thing. They also have the right of limited liability. A shareholder understands that the extent of their financial investment, their exposure, is only the amount that they paid for their shares of stock. They will not be imposed upon additional dollars if the corporation loses money. They are limited to that amount that they invested in the first place. They don't keep coming back to you. Now, there's always exceptions to that. We'll get to that shortly. But limited liability is one of the most powerful rights you have as a shareholder. You know that if I give that corporation $1,000, they can't come back against me to say, we lost $10 million. You have a 1/1000th share of the corporation, you have to pay that 1/1000th share of the loss. You are limited to whatever your investment was. That's all that can be taken from you. Lastly, you have disclosure rights. You have the right to inspect the books and the records and the proceedings of the minutes of the boards of directors of the corporation. All the corporate papers, all the corporate records, you have the ability to review them, to make sure, to protect your investment, say, hey, this board of directors is not going in the right direction, and I want them to change, so I'm going to change my vote the next time and elect somebody different on the board because I read their meeting notices, I read all their minutes, and I don't think that they're making good decisions. That's why you have the right to look at those things, because you are the voter. And as a result, you get an opportunity to look at that. Let's talk individually about what these are. Again, you have the rights of ownership, transferability, voting rights, dividend rights, limited liability rights, and disclosure rights. Let's go through each one of these so you kind of get a handle of where we are. First and foremost, you have these ownership rights. Remember, you have indirect control as a shareholder. You do not make the policy. You do not do the management. You vote upon representational governance. You elect a board of directors in a Republican form of governance that you elect them. They represent you. The ownership power of the shareholders grants the board of directors the ability to manage the corporation. But despite their role as electors, shareholders do not have any right whatsoever or any power to control or manage corporate activity other than that election. The same way we as citizens don't have the power or control to create our own law, we elect people to do that. A shareholder does not have the power to create corporate policy. They elect people, that's the board of directors. Now, what are the limitations on corporate control? You cannot, as a shareholder, act on the ordinary business and affairs of the corporation. That's why you elect a board of directors. You can't represent or bind the corporation. Again, that's the sole purview of the board of directors that you elect. You can't select or remove officers. That is the purview of the board of directors. Your sole ability is to cast a ballot for who you want as a director. You don't have the ability to fix employees' compensation. You can't compel or overturn individual board decisions other than to throw them out of office on the next election. Again, this is very similar to our civil government. You can't order the payment of dividends or enforce it or even do anything beyond receive it if it is given to you. So as a result, you have a limited role only to vote for the people who can do all these things. Your ownership right is represented by a stock certificate. The shareholders' ownership rights include the right to have a properly executed stock certificate because that represents your ownership interest. Remember, that stock certificate needs to be registered with the secretary of the corporation in order to have them know you are the one who will be voting for that share when it comes time for the annual vote. Okay. One of the shareholders' rights is free transferability. You have the right as a shareholder to sell or give away your share. You can give it to any other person who's above 21 years of age. It doesn't matter whether it's by sale, gift, or means of post-death estate transaction. That means I die and I leave it in my estate. You can do any of those, and you transfer with that transfer your voting rights. So if I sell my stock to a new person, guess what? That new person, as long as they register with the corporate secretary, they get my voting rights. Now, is there a limitation on what I can sell my stock for? No. I can give it away or I can sell it for much more than the par value of the stock. It's the marketplace that governs how much a share is worth. That's why some people play the stock market. They go off a corporation that's making a lot of money. They buy their shares because they know it will have a growth value. That one day it is, you know, if you buy Microsoft when it first comes on the market, you know, back in the 1980s, you paid a very small price for it. And today it's worth a lot more. So, you know, you can make millions of dollars playing the stock market. Well, that's the sale or transfer of your shares. And that market price is whatever the market, the free market, is willing to pay. It's not unlawful. There's no limitation on what you can sell that for. You can sell it for any amount as long as the free market will take it. Now, obviously, if you are operating in a shareholder in a closed corporation, that means only family members or only employees can buy the shares. You do not have free transferability. Why? You can only sell it to that select group of people. And once you do that, then they can buy it and you have free transferability within that class of people. But other than that, you do not. You can't sell it to the outside world. The most important aspect, however, of your corporate ownership rights are your voting rights. And remember that your common stock is the one that has the right to vote. Your preferred stock does not, your common stock does. You have the right to vote at shareholder meetings for boards of directors. There's certain also minor select things that you can also vote on with respect to that if it's in the certificate. But if it's not in the certificate of incorporation, you generally just get the vote for the directors. Who may vote? Ordinarily, only shareholders of common stock can vote in these corporate elections. And they have to be registered with the secretary of the corporation. Because if they're not, the corporation doesn't know who gets to vote. It's just like being registered when you go to vote in a political election. The number of votes that you get is one share per vote. So every share you have entitles you to a vote. Now, there is something that's called straight voting. You have one share, you get one vote. You have 100 shares, you get 100 votes. But there's something called cumulative voting. It is a mechanism within the business corporation law to protect what we call minority shareholders. That's people with small amounts of shares. If you have 100 shares and you have six people running for the board of directors, and you get one vote for every person, okay? So that means you actually get 600 votes because you get one vote for every person who is running. And you have six people running, so you get one vote. And you have 100 shares, so you have 100 votes, so you actually get 600 votes total. Under this cumulative voting, if that is permitted by the certificate of incorporation, you were entitled to cast your 600 votes for one director. So rather than voting for each one of the six, so you know you have six individual elections, six people up for the board, you may have 25 people running, but you're entitled under this cumulative voting option, if it is allowed by your certificate. The business corporation law says you can cast all 600 votes for one candidate. So you have a representative on the board and you can turn around and do that. The types of voting that you have this option of cumulative voting. It is not widespread. Not everybody uses it. Again, it's to protect minority shareholders. But also, unlike a political election, the corporate elections allow for what we call proxy voting. That is voting by means of a written vote. So I can actually not be present at the time of the meeting. I don't have to cast it like at a voting machine that you would in a political election. I can literally sign a paper, say I'm voting for X, Y, and Z as directors, fill out a paper ballot and mail it in. That's called a proxy vote. But there's something additional that I can do that I definitely can't do in a political election. I can assign my vote by proxy. So if I want my best friend Carl to turn around and cast my vote for me, I can assign Carl to do that. Frequently, a proxy vote assigns it to, say, the secretary of the corporation. I'll say, I don't know these people who I'm voting for board of directors. You do. I trust your judgment. And as a result, I'm assigning the secretary of the corporation to cast all my votes. That's done by proxy voting. That is allowable under the law. The business corporation law authorizes that. It also authorizes voting agreements and trusts. Say you have 15 minority shareholders that know that if they all collectively get together, they can elect a member of the board of directors. Well, these voting agreements basically collectivize their votes by means of a contract saying, we're all going to send in a proxy vote for Fred Smith to be a director because we trust Fred. He's going to represent us on the board, and all of our votes are going to go pursuant to this agreement. And that is allowable under the business corporation law. Now, that's voting rights. They're critical. They're the most powerful part of your ownership rights of a share, because what makes the share valuable is you get to vote as common stock for the board of directors. That voting right is the linchpin of your power as a shareholder, because that policy-making board will direct where the corporation's going to go, the type of business it's going to practice, what they're going to do, the decisions that they make. So electing them is as important as when we say vote for the legislature or vote for Congress. Why? Because they are the policy-making entities. Now, one of your shareholder rights is also the right of a dividend. A dividend is a payment made by the corporation to its shareholders as a result of generally a good performance of the corporation. If it is doing well, its business is good, that whatever business it's operating, it's being successful, then the board of directors can declare a dividend, which is a payment of a portion of its profits and success. The payment is not an absolute right. You have no right as a shareholder to dividends. It's completely up to the discretion of the board of directors. Sometimes, even if they have a very successful experience operating a corporation, they want to expand the corporation, they want to grow the corporation, so they won't declare a single dividend. And that will make the value of the share go up. So you'll make money that way if you decide to sell your shares, but you don't get the check. Why? Because of the fact that the board of directors thought it was more important to reinvest the monies that they would have declared as a dividend into the corporation. So you have no right to the dividend, but in the event that the board of directors wants to share the success of the corporation, they can declare a dividend, but they can only do it if they've been financially successful. They have to declare dividends out of what they call earned surplus, which is essentially profits made by the corporation. They can declare that dividend. Obviously, it goes first to preferred shareholders, then it goes to common stock shareholders, but it's totally in the discretion, both in size and in availability, by the board of directors. The form of the dividend can take many different forms. It can be, and usually is, money. So they can send you a check for X dollars saying, you know, we're going to declare a $1,000 dividend for every share because we've had such a successful year, we've done so well, or they can turn around and do it in property, such as a product. Let's say that the Apple company decides to declare a dividend. They can give a set of AirPods to every shareholder, which would, you know, on the market, they cost about $150. It would be, instead of giving a $150 dividend, they've had an overrun of a manufacturer of AirPods, so they send every shareholder a set of AirPods. It builds company loyalty. Everybody says, oh, well, this is a great gift. I love it. So that can be a dividend too. It doesn't have to be money. It could be some kind of property that the corporation either makes or comes into and is held by the corporation. Again, there's no right to a dividend. When it happens, then it's totally at the discretion of the directors. But when it does occur, then every shareholder has to get the same one. So all of the, and that's within classes, the preferred can get a bigger dividend than the common, but at the end of the day, every common stock shareholder has to get the same dividend. As we discussed previously, one of the critical aspects of any corporation is limited liability. And one of the reasons that someone will buy and invest in the shares of a corporation is because they know that that's the extent of the liability and financial exposure that they'll have. So if I buy 100 shares of stock for $10 a share, I know that that $1,000 is all I'm going to have to spend. If the corporation does wonderfully and makes a lot of money, then I'm just going to have that value of that $1,000 I spent go up and up and up because that stock will be in demand. But similarly, if it goes south, the corporation starts to lose a lot of money, I know that that $1,000 is all I'm on the hook for. That corporation, despite the fact that it loses a lot of money, can't go back against me and say, we want you to make up the losses. It does not happen, and it can't. That's the beauty of limited liability. The attractiveness of knowing what your exposure is and knowing what that's limited to acts as a magnet for capital. People want to invest knowing that's all I'll be on the hook for. Whereas if you invest in a partnership or you invest in a sole proprietorship and it has losses, they can come after you for those losses. You cannot have that on a corporation. That's what the effect of limited liability is. And it's a very attractive, important ownership attribute of stock. Now, like everything in the world, there's exceptions. The exceptions of limited liability are known as piercing the corporate veil. If that corporation is set up as a sham or a fraudulent corporation, I set up a corporation which I am the sole investor in, and all of the assets, instead of operating a business of profit, I use for my own personal benefit. Well, that's not what the corporation set up for. So if that loses a ton of money, just because of the fact that I'm the sole investor there, doesn't mean that I get the limited liability, doesn't mean that I can misuse and fraudulently use the corporation to deceive other people. Where you have such fraud, the law allows you to pierce the corporate veil. This is not the case of an innocent investor who invests in something and all of a sudden that business doesn't work out. This is where a circumstance where there's fraud involved. I create this corporation for the purpose of making sure that I have all this money that I won't lose because I'm going to operate it in a sham manner. There are certain requirements for piercing the corporate veil, a failure to maintain adequate corporate records because it's a sham corporation. It is a commingling of assets. Again, I'm using it for my own personal benefit rather than operating that business for profit. It's grossly undercapitalized. I know that this business is going to need $10 million to get off the ground, and I put in $1,000. And I know that it'll lose money, but I'm using this as a subterfuge, a diversion of corporate funds or assets. I put it in my own personal bank account. These types of things will lead to them going after the shareholder because they've used the corporate format as a fraud. They didn't just honestly not make money at the business. They used the corporate format to scam people who they did business with. There are special circumstances, additionally, over and above piercing the corporate veil, when you have a loss with respect to certain wage claims. You hire a bunch of employees and you don't pay them. You know this going out, that you're not going to be able to pay them. The courts have held the top 10 shareholders to be responsible for that. So the 10 largest shareholders in the corporation can be responsible for wage claims, unpaid subscriptions. You turn around and basically give away the stock. You don't collect the money you should have. Well, that's part of the corporate assets, and the 10 biggest shareholders should have to pay for that. And lastly, unauthorized dividends, where the company is actually giving out all kinds of money that was never authorized by the board of directors, the 10 largest shareholders, because that is, again, fraud based on it. But those rights of limited liability, which are overwhelmingly respected, is one of the most important attributes of any corporation. Lastly, one of the rights you have is the right of disclosure. The corporation's got to keep you informed, and you have the right to look at the corporate books, at the corporate records, at the minutes of the meetings of the board of directors. Why do you have the right to inspect those things? Why? The corporation, remember, is a separate person under the law. I don't have the right to look at anybody else's records generally that I am not connected with. Well, guess what? Under the purchasing of a share comes this right. And it's right in the business corporation law in section 624. You can inspect all of these things. Why? Because you want to be an informed voter. All of these show how well the corporation's being run. The books, records, and proceeding minutes show how the board of directors is doing their job. And you, as a shareholder with common stock, have one major job, and that's electing the board of directors. So you have to have the right to be able to know, how are they running the corporation? How are they making decisions? Are these good, gifted decisions, or are they stinky? Should I throw these guys out? Should I reelect them? And as a result of that, the law gives you the right of disclosure by means of having the ability to look at these business records. Lastly, financial statements. You also have the right to do that. Business corporation law requires a corporation to produce and furnish annual financial statements. That is the accounting records, basically, of the business. And since the whole purpose of the business is to operate a business for profit, you have the requirement of the corporation to produce these financial statements, the income statement, and the ability of shareholders to know about what is in here. And those statements under state and federal regulation have to be signed by the chief financial officer, have to be signed by the chief executive officer, so that they're honest and honorable. So when they get inspected, the shareholders know that they're accurate and that they are honest. That's it for this class. We're now going to move on to our case and class 3. Thanks so much for listening. We appreciate your attention.